Welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer with John Adams in the Knoxville News Sentinel. John, spring practice is a couple weeks away, and we'll bypass talking about spring practice because that won't make for a very interesting podcast. And so we're going to look ahead to maybe some themes for the season this year. I hope you didn't want to talk about spring practice, did you?
No, I didn't. Okay. Never have wanted to talk about it, never will.
All right, well, we'll put that to bed then and move further along. You know, Tennessee, if you believe Philip Fulmer, the Vols are back, although he walked back that statement the next day. But
almost back.
Yeah, the Vols
kind
are
back.
On We're, their way back.
Yeah.
At any rate, they did win 8 games last season. It was a step in the right direction after an abysmal start and you know, looked like the bottom could just fall out of this thing. They saved the season, won 6 in a row to end the year. But you look at it, and still, Tennessee against its rivals doesn't really seem to be all that much closer to catching the Alabamas and the Georgias of the world, and really even Florida. I mean, they got trounced this year by the Gators. And so, you know, for Tennessee to take the next step here, they have to start picking off a rival or two. And it seems like Florida is probably the one most within reach. Would you agree?
Yes, I would. And I give Tennessee credit because it's crawling up from the bottom here. 2 last place finishes in the division back to back, but it's been able to move above South Carolina, Missouri, Vanderbilt, and Kentucky. I think Kentucky, to me, is like a solid 4th right now in that division, the way its program is going. But Florida, yeah, that's and what makes it even more interesting is the coaches started out kind of in the same situation. Dan Mullen comes here from Mississippi State, takes over a Florida program that went, I guess, 4-8 under Jim McElwain.
Yeah, I think they won 4 games that last
won,
year.
Uh-huh. Won 4 games and are 4-7. Or they might have had a game.
I think
canceled,
they might have a game
4-7.
Yeah.
So you have that going on, and then with Tennessee 4-8 the previous year and Butch Jones's last year. So they're kind of starting from the same place. And when you look at it, Florida doesn't have that consistency in recruiting or on the field that Alabama and Georgia do. Although, when you look at what it's done against Tennessee, you couldn't really tell that Florida has been as down as it has been because it still dominated the series.
Yeah, you look at the last 2 seasons, and this is really what the remaining questions, I think, for Jeremy Pruitt is, can he be more competitive against his rivals? I mean, because, you know, we're talking about maybe getting a win against a rival, but before you do that, he's got to be competitive against a rival. I mean, I know you could say the Alabama game, oh, well, they kept it close for 3 quarters, but, you know, Tua Tagovailoa got injured in that game, and really, I mean, let's face it, I don't know that anyone really rational thought that Tennessee was going to win that game.
No, that's always a weak line of thinking, and losing programs do it constantly. Well, we were competitive against Alabama until midway in the 3rd, and we hung with Florida till the 4th quarter. We were still in the game with Georgia at halftime. I mean, that's what losing programs say. So, no, bottom line, look at the score, and as you mentioned in Alabama's case, it didn't have one of the best players in the country in the second half. So,
and you look at those scores. I mean, Florida 34-3 loss. Georgia 43-14 loss. And then Alabama was the most respectable of the 3, still a 3-touchdown loss, even with Alabama playing half that game without Tua at 35-13. But still, Georgia and Alabama have separated themselves a little bit from Florida. So Florida is there for the taking, I guess, for Tennessee. What do you think is separating these programs right now? I mean, I guess how is Florida having this gap? Because you mentioned they haven't been recruiting at the level as Alabama and Georgia. So where is this gap at between Florida and Tennessee?
And also, they haven't had some great coaches. I mean, Dan Mullen, I think, is a great coach. But prior to him, Jim McElwain didn't get it done there at all. They've had
and Will Muschamp before him.
Will Muschamp. And they've had just really flagrant weaknesses in different areas of their team. But you look at it recently, they've still consistently fielded better defenses than Tennessee. And they've had better quarterback play. It's been up and down. but it did have Will Grier a couple of years, a couple of wins against Tennessee, and then Felipe Franks, the epitome of an up and down guy, some highlight plays and then some disastrous plays, but he beat Tennessee. He beat Tennessee consistently, and now you have with Kyle Trask. I mean, that to me made that game even more one-sided. The fact that they brought in a guy who hadn't started since he was a freshman in high school or something like that, mm-hmm. a sophomore in high school. And the fact that they were able to pull away in that game, and he was very effective. So I would think at quarterback, an upgrading quarterback play would be a big plus for Tennessee. That's very much what it needs against Florida.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly agree on the defense. They've had some really good defensive units. Quarterback, you know, the one year Tennessee did beat them recently was when they had the better quarterback, I think, when they had Joshua Dobbs. Although, was that the year that Florida had Will Grier? No, they didn't. That was the year after they had Will Grier.
They had the transfers.
Yeah, Appleby and Luke Del Rio were the two.
Luke Del Rio. Yeah. And Luke Del Rio was actually a starter and got hurt, so Tennessee didn't even get the best transfer. They got, and if you remember, Appleby had this half of his life in the first half against Tennessee, a total aberration, and Tennessee pulled that out. But, yeah, that's a good point, you know, that Tennessee beat him when it had a quarterback advantage. But usually in that game, Florida's quarterbacks have played better than Tennessee's, and Florida hadn't had great quarterbacks all the time either.
No, and that's just it. I mean, since Tim Tebow, I would say Will Grier is the only quarterback Florida has had that is much above average. I mean, I know Kyle Trask did an admirable job last season, and so you could say maybe he's borderlining on being something more than a little bit above average. But by and large, you know, beyond Will Grier, I don't think Florida's had a quarterback that, you know, everybody in the SEC would be lining up for, or even the majority of the SEC would be lining up for.
Yeah, and in those games against Tennessee, the quarterbacks have made big-time plays in the fourth quarter. Grier and Franks both did that. And that's been kind of a theme in this series of recently, and I think Tennessee needs to turn that around. I mean, it will need a big game from Jaron Garantano if, in fact, he's the quarterback, or somebody, if Harrison Bailey, the freshman, beats him out, or whoever, Brian Maurer, they need to have a big game from their quarterback. And so I think this puts even more import on that game this year. I mean, it's always a big game, and it's usually the first big conference game. Invariably, it's the first big conference game, and I just think the stakes are even higher this season, because what you're talking about, can Tennessee take that next step, knock off another one of the rivals and so forth? But it starts with Florida, and that, to me, is the most winnable game of all the rivals.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, it's going to be at home this year, and even beyond the home and road, I think when you stack up, you know, Florida against Oklahoma, Georgia, and Alabama, it just probably is the most beatable of that group. And so if you want to go from 8 wins to 9 wins, there's a couple ways you can do it. One, you beat a rival. Two, they could, you know, I guess still get to 9 if they don't slip up against any of the other 8 teams in the regular season and then win the bowl game. But you're really leaving yourself no margin for error by going about it, you know, in that direction, going 8-4 in the regular season, losing to those 4 teams and then winning the bowl. It would still be a 1-game improvement. But I don't think, you know, to me, the difference between 8 and 9 wins is not as great as if you would say one of those wins were Florida. You know, if they go 0-4 against that slate that we talked about, and go 9-4, I mean, is it really going to be much of an improved season? I don't know. If you can tout a win over a rival like Florida, you know, a team that's, even in its not its best years, is expected to be a top 25 program, you know, I think you can tout some improvement there.
Yeah, I do too. And I think with Florida, the fact Tennessee is playing in Neyland Stadium, that's a big plus. They're a disadvantage at quarterback. You have to say that based on what happened last season.
Yeah, no doubt.
But I think Tennessee could be better in both lines. It's definitely better in offensive line. And I think it's definitely better at running back. And so those are, to me, that game will come down to Tennessee running the football behind what could be a really good offensive line and depth at running back. And I don't see any other matchup, Alabama, Georgia, or even Oklahoma outside the conference, where Tennessee, the big four games, will have a decided advantage in several positions, which it will against Florida.
So much is made of recruiting rankings, and sometimes I think it's a little bit too much, but there is a lot of merit to, if you're recruiting well, it's going to show up on the field, usually. I mean, I think a team like Texas proves an exception to that. I went back, and you look at Texas. Texas has been in the top the top 10 of recruiting rankings in 5 of the last 6 years. And they sure really haven't looked like it on the field. But beyond that, I mean, there are some exceptions, but usually I think the recruiting rankings provide a pretty good picture of what you're going to see on the field. And you look at teams like Georgia and Alabama, I mean, they've just been perennially in the top 10 of the recruiting rankings going back several years. But you look at the difference between Tennessee and Florida, and it's really not that much. I went back 8 years, and in that eight-year span from 2013 to the 2020 classes, Florida has had 4 top 10 classes. Tennessee, in that eight-year span, has had 3 top 10 classes. And Florida's had 7 top 15 classes. Tennessee has had 5 top 15 classes. So there's a little bit of a difference, but it's not this huge difference in recruiting rankings like you see between a Tennessee and an Alabama or Tennessee and Georgia. And so I guess that part of what that tells me is Florida might be recruiting a little bit better, but mostly I think Florida's just doing more with the guys it gets once they get on campus.
Yeah, that was even when you look at the Tennessee series with Florida, that was evident even with a coach like Jim McElwain, who I never thought was very good. Or you could say the same about Will Muschamp, that they were better against Tennessee. They aren't great coaches, certainly, but you know, they have gotten more out of their players. You might give credit to some coordinators along the way. But I think Florida, Dan Mullen's a great example of that. And that to me is will become more and more of a prominent theme in this rivalry is Mullen versus Pruitt coming in at the same time. And I look at what he's done in 2 years there. I don't think he got enough credit for that turnaround. I know some people say, well, Florida had talent, more talent, mm-hmm. when they only won 4 games. They really had a lot more talent. Well, you couldn't prove it. I mean, they won only 4 games for a reason, and he turned them into a 10-win team immediately.
Right.
He knows what he wants at every position. And I think Jeremy Pruitt does that too. I think he knows what he wants. I think he has a good game plan. So I think that adds something to this – to this rivalry battle in Tennessee trying to emerge. I wonder if fans, do you think, if Tennessee went 8-4 but beat Florida and, say, lost to Kentucky, would fans be happier at that than they would be, you know, if they lost to the Big Four and won all their other games?
I'm not sure. I think we could ask Butch Jones about that, about the 2016 season. You know, fans weren't real happy that season when Tennessee did beat Florida, but then had a chance to win the East and shot themselves in the foot down the stretch.
South Carolina, yeah.
Yeah, so that could go both ways. You know, I do think fans would be happy to see a win over the rival, a rival, you know, like Florida, who I think is Tennessee's biggest football rival right now. I mean, you know, your longtime fans might say Alabama. You know, with the Kirby Pruitt thing and recruiting, you know, fighting over some of the same guys, some people might say Georgia, but I really think most people would probably say it's Florida right now, and probably has been for a while. But even with that, getting that win early in the season, you know, and then stumbling late against Kentucky, I don't know if people really would be happier with that.
Well, that's a good point, because fans would get so excited. If it beats Tennessee, beats Florida, the expectations shoot up.
Oh, yeah.
Now people are saying, hey, we could win the East.
Right.
Georgia plays Alabama this year, so that Tennessee does, of course, as well. So that kind of negates that loss for Tennessee. But, yeah, I think fans would get their hopes up, as they did in that what looked like a magical season when Tennessee beat Florida. Great comeback. Hail Mary beats Georgia. fans were sky high, and then lost that close game to A&M, and then just unraveled.
Yeah, I mean, let's play it out a little bit. Florida is the conference opener. If Tennessee gets that win, kind of as you were saying, then they got Missouri and South Carolina. Okay, they can beat those teams. 3-0 in the SEC. Talks are going to start about Vols win in the East.
Uh-huh.
And then, okay, let's say they lose to Alabama. No big deal, because like you said,
Georgia will probably lose to Alabama too.
Right, so. And has Auburn on the schedule annually, right?
Right.
So still advantage Vols. Then they got Arkansas. Okay, there you go. Back to 4-1. Just got to close things out in November. But then here comes Kentucky, the team that hypothetically you mentioned too would beat Tennessee, and then comes Georgia, and then, oh my, people would be up in arms from a 4-1 start, the SEC East in their grasp.
Yeah.
And then,
Well, and two, you can add to that, which would create more frustration for fans, because Tennessee has been able to beat Kentucky. They beat it a couple of years ago. They beat it in 18 when Kentucky was number 12 in the country and Tennessee was last in the East. I mean, it's kind of like, well, you can pretty much always beat Kentucky with rare exceptions. So that would make that loss more devastating, sure. Probably more so than if it lost to, say, South Carolina, Missouri. Maybe Kentucky wasn't a good example. But expectations have a lot to do with it.
Yeah, and if they did lose to the four teams we expect them to lose to and beat everybody else, you know, you lose to Oklahoma, Florida, Alabama, and Georgia, and those losses would be kind of spread out through the season. There would be no back-to-back losses. And so I think if you polled fans and said, you can either have 8-4 beating Florida and losing to Kentucky, or you can have 8-4 losing to Florida and beating Kentucky, I think they would tell you that they'd rather have the win over Florida. In reality, I don't think they would, because I think the reactions, they'd be up in arms, a lot of fans, after they had a chance to win the East, and then if they blew it in November.
Yeah, I wonder with Florida, it could, Tennessee's on the way up, but Florida's on the way up too. And I think that's a big challenge for Tennessee, that all these years and recently when Florida was down by its standards, and Tennessee so seldom could beat it. I mean, it's going to be harder now to do that. And I think it's going to really, you've talked about recruiting, but with these two programs, it's going to be who can get the most out of his players in September that wins that game.
And I think a good way to show how much you're getting out of your guy, I think it's always interesting to look at the recruiting rankings, but then I also like to look at on the back end, how many guys are you having drafted every year? And you look at Tennessee, and in 2015 and 2016, they didn't have any guys drafted at all, nor did they in 2019. So three out of the last 5 years, they had no draft picks. 2017, they did pretty well. They had six draft picks, including Derek Barnett in the first round. And then 2018, they had three draft picks, although none went in rounds one or two. So in that five-year span, the Vols produced nine draft picks and only one guy in the first two rounds. You look at Florida in that span, 2015, they had eight guys drafted, including two guys in the first round. 2016, again, they had seven or eight guys drafted, couple first-round picks. 2017, same story, eight guys drafted. 2018, you know, another five guys drafted. I mean, you go down the line, and you're seeing that even though maybe on the front end some of these classes were ranked pretty similarly, 4 years later, 3, 4, 5 years later, when these guys get to NFL draft time, Florida's the one sending a half dozen to eight guys to the draft every year getting drafted, and Tennessee in some years is coming up empty.
Those are interesting numbers from a standpoint of Florida's recruiting well enough. And I mean, they're developing these players. And when you look at those numbers, you think, well, why hadn't Florida done better than it has? I think you could look at, you want to, I just read something where I think in the last 3 years, Tennessee's 13th in the conference in players sent to the NFL combine, ahead of only Vanderbilt, behind Kentucky. That's kind of glaring.
Yeah, and it goes hand in hand with the lack of guys drafted. Usually, you don't go to the combine, you're probably not getting drafted.
Yeah, so And I look now at Florida's situation where I think they've got a better coach than they've had since Urban Meyer. And so player development for them is going to be crucial. And the same thing applies to Tennessee. Really, if you're ranked in 24/7's composite in recruiting, and one team is maybe five notches ahead of the other one, I mean, really, how much difference does that make?
It could be one to two guys. Yeah, it's not often that much.
And you look at, I think it's interesting, still talking recruiting, that Zachary Evans, the running back, baffling running back who's still looking for a place to run, is going to take, of last reading, he was going to take a visit to Florida.
Yeah, he has one official visit left that he can use. He didn't sign in February after he had that signing with Georgia in December that didn't last. Georgia let him, a very strange deal, let him out of the NLI. Yeah. But he had one official visit left, and yeah, according to reports from 247 Sports, he's going to use that visit to Florida. And so that's kind of interesting because he's taken a visit to Tennessee. I think, you know, even with his checkered senior season in terms of, you know, he's suspended for a few games, this mess with his recruiting, there's no denying his talent, but yeah, that would be interesting if when the dust settles, he winds up at Florida and not Tennessee. You know, I think Tennessee fans would, you know, it'd be interesting if you could offer him an assurance that Zachary Evans just signs somewhere outside the SEC, signs at USC, Southern Cal, or you just run the risk of Tennessee or Florida. I don't think some people might say, just give me the sure thing that he's not going to go to Florida. Get him to Southern Cal or somewhere. Get him out of here and make sure he's not a Gator.
Oh, I agree, Blake. When you think about it, running backs, I mean, better that he goes to Alabama or Georgia because those teams are always stacked with running backs.
Right.
I mean, he'll just be another good one if he is, in fact, as good as recruiting services say. But Florida has a very obvious need at a running back. They really need a big-time running back. And if he's as good as the recruiting services say he is, he might could be that as a freshman. And what a difference that can make. You talk about one or two players making a difference, maybe he could be that player. So I think his recruiting, I agree with you. If you could just, you had your way, you could make a decision and you could say, well, we can take our chance on whether he goes to Tennessee or Florida, or you can be guaranteed that he will go somewhere else, then the more prudent choice would be go somewhere else.
I think so. Yeah, make sure you don't have to line up against him. Send him out west.
Yeah, let him play at Oregon.
John, I just want to make sure I really skipped over that. You don't have any thoughts on spring football that you're just dying to share. I didn't give you an opportunity at the beginning of this podcast. I really should have checked with you before we went on air. Do you have some burning thoughts on spring football you want to share?
Well, yeah, I hope the weather's nice for those guys. Mm-hmm. And think about it. You look at spring training, spring practice. Spring training is just how many Astros you can be now. But spring practice, it's all, you always have this vision of, here's where guys can make a move on the depth chart. Here's where something, you could show something in the spring. First of all, it seems as though everyone's hurt. I mean, think about all the guys. He'll be held out of spring practice.
Right. Uh-huh.
And then all these prominent position battles, if there were no preseason practice, yeah, maybe spring would matter more, but there's it starts all over again. So this is just a chance for coaches to spend more time with their players, scream a lot, and
yeah, and the other thing is this year Tennessee only has four early enrollees. So, you know, if freshmen are going to factor into any of these competitions, other than, I mean, Harrison Bailey and Jimmy Holiday, the quarterbacks are early enrolled. They're among the four. But, you know, a lot of guys that I think have a path to playing time as freshmen, they're not even going to be here till the summer. So, things get a lot more interesting in August.
And obviously, a big theme to this season will be who wins the quarterback job. Right. It's been that way ever since Jared Garantano became the starter. Who will take his job away? And so, however, it's meaningless in the spring usually because they don't, if they would say, we want to have our quarterback selected by the end of spring practice, because we want to go into the off season. Everybody knows who our guy is. He can have an impact in leadership and off season training, voluntary workouts, that kind of thing. But nobody hardly does that. The only person I can think of that really had a big impact in the spring recently was Georgia's Jake Fromm. Because he came in as a true freshman. Mm-hmm. They had the established quarterback in Jacob Eason. But Fromm just really showed something in spring. So maybe Harrison Bailey could be the next Jake Fromm. That would make it interesting, even though they wouldn't name a quarterback then.
Right.
It would really be a chance for Harrison Bailey to show off what he can do. And you know how you would look at it. If he does really well in the spring, the coaches will say, well, look what he did with just this little – in this little amount of time, we put him through preseason, the opener, he'll be ready to go. So I guess that's about as compelling of a spring storyline as you could have.
I suppose it is a little more interesting this year with that quarterback competition. Spring practice starts March 9th. Spring game is April 18th. But for John and I, we are looking forward to September 26th when the Vols will host Florida. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State. Hi, I'm Blake Topmeyer, and I cover UT football for Knox News. I'm impressed by the passion this fan base has for the Vols, and I enjoy bringing you analysis of the team you love. It's also my job to hold coaches and administrators accountable for their decisions. Vols fans deserve that type of coverage. And nothing beats a fall Saturday in an SEC stadium. The support of Knox News allows me to do this rewarding sports journalism. If you want to hear more stories like this, consider becoming a subscriber and go to knoxnews.com/subscribe. Thank you for listening.